You're listening to WCOM-FM, LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the dial, and live streaming from WCOMFM.org. Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. From Main Street to Wall Street, the issues impacting your business, we're talking leadership, technology, politics, regulation, and success stories that inspire. It's time to focus on business. I'm your host, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and business consultant, Lee Strickland. I'm the CEO of Focus Resources and 2S Innovations and founder of the Network for Business Growth. I've also created the Core Business Transformation System. And now today's program. On today's show, I want to talk about some of the new things that are impacting our businesses. And those two things that I want to talk about today are the changes in overtime eligibility and pending increases and actual increases in minimum wage in many markets. So we're going to talk about the background of what the current requirements are for overtime eligibility and what has changed to those elements. And while you may think you are all right now complying with the existing rules, the Fair Labor Standard Act rules, and I'm going to get into those in detail, the reality is you may not be in compliance even today with the rules that have been around and the rates and things that have been around since 2004. Many of the small businesses and some of the larger businesses I work with as clients have made the mistaken interpretation of the rule saying, if I pay someone a salary, that makes them exempt from overtime. And that's not true. And so we want to dig into this eligibility for overtime under the current rules, which will be in place and still applicable till December 1st of 2016. And then the new rules and what has changed to make more people overtime eligible, and those rules came out last month in May of 2016. And so we're looking at the overtime rules first and the changes, and you need to understand that the government estimates that this change in overtime eligibility is going to affect 4.1 million businesses in our country. That's small businesses and large businesses. And so we want to take a look at those rules. Now, the minimum wage impacts vary across the country and vary business to business. So if you're in California and you're listening, we know that California has passed the law that minimum wage will be $15 an hour by January 2022. And so that means there is a step increase each of those years between now and January 1st of 2022 to get minimum wage to $15. It's currently $10.50, I believe, in California. And it varies currently what the level is state by state. And there are different states that have already made changes to minimum wage and have put out their schedule of when minimum wage will change. Also, the Obama administration and President Obama signed a rule into effect, an executive order, that changed minimum wage on government contracts to $10 an hour, while the federal wage rate is still $7.75, which was what is prevalent in most states, I'm going to say, because most states don't set a rate different than what the federal rate is. They just default to that, and it makes life a little bit easier. But around the country, things change. Oregon's changed, California has changed, and other states are making those changes. And so we as business owners need to be able to identify and quantify three dimensions of these changes. It is the financial aspect of these changes, how they're going to impact our business. The operational impact to our business, how are we going to have to change our staffing and resource plans based on these changes and the financial affordability of what our particular businesses can deal with. And then the compliance aspect of this, because it's not optional to comply with overtime rules and regulations with the Fair Labor Standards Act. It's not optional not to pay minimum wage to those categories that are required to be minimum wage categories. And so this tipping point, the tip of the iceberg for us right now is thinking about 4.1 million businesses that are going to be impacted just by the overtime regulations change. And that impact starts December 1st of 2016, this year. So we're sitting here now with just a little bit over 5 months, if you're listening to this on our June broadcast. If we're later in the year, you're listening to a replay, we have less and less time to understand and make strategic decisions as to how our businesses are going to address the changes. So what are the changes and what are the current rules? So let's talk about answering three questions for our businesses. What has changed with the overtime rules? What will the impact of that change be on our business? And how will minimum wage changes that are coming impact our business? And so what we want to do in answering these questions is being able to assess and define how we need to act strategically to plan our business to minimize the financial and operational impact on our business. And as we know in business, when one thing changes, there are frequently ripple effects for the impact and how we do things. So if we need to change our staffing, if we need to change payroll levels, let's say we're increasing minimum wage rates and we're taking it to $15 an hour. What if our supervisors are at $15 an hour and now our workers are going to be $15 an hour? That means we're going to have a ripple effect to increase our wages on those people that are currently $15 an hour to a new higher rate because they're doing something that is more skilled than the people receiving minimum wage currently. And so we have to look at our roles, our responsibilities, and how we're going to manage the total cost of staffing and operating our businesses, whether that's the minimum wage impacts or the overtime impacts. And I'm going to say that the majority of the show today is about the overtime change and about the Fair Labor Standard Act and the rules that we need to be compliant with the current rules, and then we need to be prepared to be compliant on December 1st with the new overtime rule. And as time allows, I will get into calculating and giving you scenarios and ways to understand and ways to quantify how these two impacts on your business are financially, are operationally, are compliance impacts on your business, and that they can be the dominoes that lead you to have other decisions that you have to make strategically about your business. And so let's talk about the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, that was created in 1938. And that law comes in and addresses four primary things: minimum wage, overtime, child labor, and discrimination rules. And so with regard to overtime eligibility, there's a three-part test in the FLSA, and the salary level, which is what we're going to talk about, has changed, that has made the difference in who will be eligible for overtime, is a key component of this. So the three elements are the salary basis, the salary level, and your job duties. So first, every organization needs to look at their business and look at jobs, not job titles, but the actual functions of what each person in the organization does. And that is going to determine what category you fall into as to being exempt or non-exempt currently and in the future when the rates change. And so when we're looking at this, we need to understand what each person in our organization does, how long they are currently working, if they've been currently viewed as management and exempt from overtime, whether they are or not, we'll get into that, and what it means for your business when that changes. So most of the organizations I've worked for, as corporations, as small businesses, certain categories of employees were exempt from overtime. And those salary categories were generally the professionals, so accountants, people related to advanced degrees in finance, lawyers, doctors, the white collar workers in the organization. And those were generally viewed as exempt from overtime. But there were some positions I held in the corporate world where I was a non-exempt salary person, meaning I didn't meet the three tests, the salary basis, the salary level, and the job duties that exempted me from overtime. If we looked at those jobs that I had, and the jobs that you have currently for your management, your skilled workers, your white-collared workers in the organization, then we're looking to see, is the salary level above the current standard level? That means you would pay them or would not pay them, depending on where they fall on salary, for extra hours worked. Now, I've never had a corporate job where I didn't work at least 50 hours, if not 60 hours a week consistently. Some jobs have been more than that. And so we need to understand that the salary level and the salary basis are two elements of the three-part test. Salary basis simply means that we're paying someone a predetermined amount every week. And so when we're looking at that predetermined amount for the balance of this year up to December 1st, that level has been historically $455 per week, or $23,660 in annual salary. Now, side note, because this is important in understanding how the new level came about, is that that rate has not changed in almost 12 years, about 12 years. 2004, I believe, is the last time it was changed. And when we look at the poverty levels, when we look at the average weekly wage rate for most salary workers in this country now, we see that that level is out of sync and hasn't moved along with the other wages and stuff in the marketplace. And so when we look at that, the current average weekly salaried workers rate is $59,592 a year. That's the average salary. Our eligibility level salary under the current rules is $23,660. So that's less than half of that average salaried workers rate. Poverty level on average right now in this country for a single person is $11,880. And for a family of four, it's $24,300. And again, we go back and we look at the current overtime eligible salary rate is $23,660. So if you make that amount or more, you aren't eligible for overtime under the current rules. And so when the government's looked at this, they've made the decision to update that salary level eligibility. So first criteria is job duties. What are we doing to make us eligible or ineligible for overtime? For me, the second element is the salary base. Am I getting paid a salary every year, a predetermined amount, regardless of the number of hours I work? And then what is that salary level? And this is what we're changing. The eligibility level is going up. So right now, 4.1 million businesses, government statistic, currently have workers that are making $23,660 or more as a management position, meaning they are exempt and have met all three rules. We're going to assume everyone's complying when we're talking about this. So they have met the salary base. They're paid a certain amount every week or every month, every biweekly check for doing a certain job duties. Those job duties meet the qualifications for being exempt. And then the third element, that salary level, means they made $23,660 or more. And so if that is true, if all three of those elements come together, then they are not currently eligible for overtime. You have to meet all three tests. Now, the new rule is that if you make, $47,476 or more, you will be exempt from overtime. So now we see this swing. We were at 23,000 and change. And now we're going to $47,476 to see who is eligible. So everyone who was currently ineligible for overtime because they were between the $23,660 and now the $47,476 now becomes eligible for overtime. And so those of us who were in corporate or in small business who were on salary, who are in that salary range but do not meet the job duties test or certain specified exempt categories, will become eligible for overtime payment. And that is significant. Overtime payment is on any hours worked over 40 hours, and it's time and a half. So if somebody's making $10 an hour, they're going to get paid $15 an hour in overtime. So as businesses, we need to sit down and take the first step to understand what our business is structured like today. What hours are we operating? How are we staffing? And how many people do we have on our payroll based on job duties, salary level, and being paid a salary base? Do they meet the requirements currently for being exempt from overtime. So once we have that list, we're looking to see, are we complying with the rules today? Then we're going to overlay that and then look at that same list and say, what are their job duties? What are their salary levels against this new salary level test? So salary base, salary level, which changes, and then the job duties. So we really need to sit down, analyze our workforce, and understand who's working over 40 hours a week on average. What is their normal compensation levels? And then we're going to run the numbers. So I did this for one study I just did, and I ran several scenarios. I put together an Excel spreadsheet, and I'm going to make that available on my website if you want to take a look at that analysis. Assumed a California company, assumed the minimum wage increases, and analyzed those separately. And then I'm going to add in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing the analysis of the two effects of overtime eligibility and minimum wage changes on the ripple effects of how we're going to staff that organization. And so what we're doing in looking at those numbers and those scenarios for a retail, fast food business assumed to be in California and their operating hours and all of those assumptions that are there, what is going to change for their business? The most immediate change that we have to deal with is that overtime level. So how many assistant managers, how many managers may be falling into that category of between the $23,660 that we were previously exempt and the new level of exemption of $47,476. And when we do that analysis and we look at determining their job duties, their roles, their responsibilities, and what activity we have them doing every week. And when we look at them saying, say they're going to work 50 or 60 hours, how close are they to that margin of being in the exempt standard salary level that we need them to be in? And we do an analysis person by person, role by role, job duty by job duty, to understand what we need to do to rebalance our workforce, to reallocate workload, and still provide a financially viable business with great customer service, adequate staffing, or beyond adequate in preference. We want to maintain our level and our standards in our businesses that we currently have. And we're running the numbers to identify and understand if we can actually do that. And that begins by identifying the people who will be impacted by this. And so we get compliant on our current rules. If we're not already compliant, if we're already compliant, we take the analysis immediately into understanding who is impacted by the salary level change. And then we have to run the numbers and understand whether they are adding up and which scenario we're going to talk about today is going to be the one that works to keep us in business, that keeps our business viable, and keeps the workforce we need in place and enables us to continue to stay in business and grow our businesses. So this hypothetical California business that we're going to talk about as an example currently has two full-time managers and three assistant managers. The two full-time managers currently are paid salaries that exceed that minimum $47,467 amount that the standard has been set. And so we're not concerned with them in the first pass of our analysis because they're exempt. We're going to stop and we're going to look at the three managers, the three assistant managers, who are working 50 hours a week and who are currently below that standard salary level. And we look at those and understand the math. So let's say assistant manager one is making $40,000 a year. They work 50 hours a week, which means they have 10 hours of overtime a week. And that means over the course of the year, if I am paying overtime to that person for the current operations, the way we're doing business, I'm going to end up paying them $55,000 a year, $15,000 in overtime impact with this rule change. And that's significant. Because in this scenario, that $15,000 increase puts them on a financial footing, a salary compensation base equal to their manager. And so now we're starting to see the first ripple effect. If we look at the second manager who makes $35,000 a year in this scenario, again working 50 extra hours a year, that's an additional $13,125, 50 hours a week, 10 extra hours a week, or $13,125 in overtime per year. Again, approaching the level of their current supervising manager salary. So, assistant manager 3, running the similar scenario, $30,000 a year, 50 hours a week, that person would get an additional $11,250 a year in compensation. So, now we're going to have managers supervising overtime eligible assistant managers who will be getting an equivalent wage to them for less responsibility. So that means we would have to rebalance our workforce to keep things equitable. And so that would probably mean in this scenario that we would either add more assistant managers, reducing their hours to 40 hours a week with no overtime, or we're going to let them run with the overtime, but we have to give raises to our managers. We start walking through those alternatives of what is it to rebalance our workforce and what's that financial impact. Just the overtime base overtime standard salary level eligibility change could potentially, in this scenario related to just these five employees of the business, cost the business for almost $40,000 more per year in salaries. That's almost a 19% change in our salary levels just impacting these five positions. And that doesn't mean there won't be other positions in the organization that are eligible for overtime now that weren't previously. So we know that we have an issue, nearly 20% increase in our labor costs. And that means there'll be either a reduction in profit or a raise in our prices to our customers. And that has a ripple effects on those businesses. So we can look at our organization, identify who is going to have an impact, and then we have to walk through scenarios that enable us to quantify our options. Scenario one, we keep everything the same and we just pay overtime. That'll cost us $40,000 a year more in overtime, and will likely generate a need to increase the salaries of our key managers, our frontline managers. So we're going to think about that in our analysis. But for now, we're simplifying this. We're not creating an increase in salary levels for those two managers. We're just going to look at how to address the assistant manager eligibility issue. So scenario two would mean that we could just increase the base pay of one or more of these assistant managers to the level that makes them exempt. So we'll just talk about one of them at this point. The assistant manager one, the first assistant manager, if I gave them a raise to get them ineligible based on their salary level being above that standard level, then that would only cost me about $7,500. And so that would mean rather than paying $15,000 more to that person a year, it's less expensive for me to give them a raise to exceed that standard salary level. So that's an option I look at each person that is in this chain of command that needs to become exempt or will be paid overtime. And so again, it gets back to job duties. If I'm giving them a raise that essentially puts them at the level of compensation of what my job duties are for managers, does that mean I'm also going to give them a promotion to that level? Are they going to get more responsibilities to go with more money? And again, that's a strategic decision. But making those changes and analyzing what is going on with each business enables us to arrive at the optimal solution for our business and see how these ripple effects go into place. So we could, in theory, approach this any number of ways. So we can just keep things as they are and pay the overtime. We can give people raises to get them exempt and possibly change their job duties to have more responsibility given that we're giving them more compensation. The third option is that we reduce that wage impact by changing the number of hours that are worked by the assistant managers and the managers so that no one is working excessive hours above 40. And so that may mean that we add more assistant managers or more frontline managers. And so we have to walk through that analysis. And in the scenario I've worked out that you'll see on the website, and it will be available for you to print out, download, and understand this, is that we had almost a 20% increase by paying the overtime. In scenario three, when we look at the numbers, rebalancing the workforce by reducing some people's hours to 40, to some people's hours to 30, and adding more hours to exempt positions, which isn't a good thing, but is workable and is a reality of how we make our businesses more affordable when we can't afford to fully pay everyone what we wish we could pay them if we had all the money in the world to do so. So we had the first scenario was a 19% increase. The second scenario where we increased base salaries is an 18% increase. Now the scenario three, where we rebalance the hours, adding a few more hours to the managers, taking some hours away from the current assistant managers, and in fact, essentially making them three-quarter time, and adding two new part-time assistant managers, gives us only a 1.8% increase. Again, I'm going to have this on the website. And so when we're looking at this, we really want to run through the numbers and understand how things work for our business. Scenario four is a combination. We add people, we reduce hours, we promote somebody. We just run through these scenarios. I have essentially six scenarios of how we're trying to test rebalancing just the managerial staff of this operation. And so whether we are adding people, full-time people, part-time people, we start generating ripple effects because we're going to be managing more workers. We're going to be scheduling and scheduling more people. We may, in fact, by adding more people to control our overtime increases and eligibility, we may end up triggering our businesses reaching a level of total employees that trigger us into other compliance requirements like Family Medical Leave Act or Obamacare, Affordable Health Care Act. Those kind of things are the ripple effects, the domino effects that we need to understand for our businesses. And so while the overtime increase and eligibility affects 4.1 million businesses, the ripple effects will go out from price changes, from decreases in hours to some employees that were full-time and became part-time. We saw that with Obamacare. We see businesses by necessity having to rebalance their workforce and make choices that would not be their first choices because they have limited financial means. They do not have infinite profit to absorb this. And so businesses will have to make their decisions on overtime eligibility and how that will be addressed by doing operational, financial, and compliance analysis. And that starts as simply as creating a worksheet, a spreadsheet, listing all of your employees, their compensation, their average hours worked, and going through and doing a job duties analysis for each employee to see if they meet the job duties test. You're creating a list of your salaried employees. You're looking at their salary base, how much you're paying them annually against that new standard level. And then you're going to look at the job duties and say, do they meet these three tests? And then you're going to quantify your options. Pay the overtime. Add more staff, reducing hours. Add hours to your managers who are still exempt and reduce other people's hours and add more staff. Add more staff, what's the implication? What else will I have to comply with? How complex will my business become if I am splitting what were full-time jobs of three people into five or six part-time jobs for five or six employees? And so we have to be strategic in how we respond to regulatory changes, to rule changes. And so when we're looking at our business, the first thing that we want to look at complying with this year and planning for is that December 1st eligibility implementation date that we have to understand. We can't just let things happen and see what happens. It's too costly potentially for most businesses to do that. Your business may not be impacted by that if substantially all of your employees, the majority of your employees, are in exempt categories that are white collar positions that are by their job duties exempt. And so that's fine and dandy. But for those businesses who are retail, those businesses, gas stations, mom and pops, dry cleaners, bakeries, all of those things that have a substantial portion of their team on minimum wage, on lower salaries just by the nature of the industry, they need to invest the time and effort in this analysis. If you don't know how to do the analysis, you need to bring someone in to do the analysis with you. I'm not going to say for you, because only you will know the job duties and the average time your employees spend working for your business. And this is an important thing to think about too, with the rule changes, with new interpretations by various agencies in the government on what constitutes being on the clock. When is your employee on the clock? If they're on call all weekend and have a pager and can't just do whatever they want, they can't travel, are they on the clock? What does the government say about that? What if your employee is called out while they're on vacation? Are they on the clock? What if somebody just calls to ask a question? What is the status of people being on call, available to work? What if people take work home on the weekends? What if somebody has the business phone or their computers, they're constantly monitoring their email and responding while they're at home? Is that hours worked? And that's something else that each business needs to sit down and define as to when someone is doing it because that's the way they operate. And can you continue to allow that to happen because that's just what the employee prefers to do? Or when is that being dictated by the company? And does that make a difference? And that's a completely different show. So I want to stick with the overtime analysis and then the minimum wage analysis, because that impact, again, this isn't a one-time thing. So we have to be aware that while December 1st of this year is the first increase in the standard salary level that makes someone ineligible or eligible for overtime, this change, this salary level is going to change every 3 years. So we're going to be looking at this again in 2019 for a level change in eligibility. And in the foreseeable future, that it's only fair to assume that the standard salary level will go up, because they're looking at the analysis of the average salary rates, poverty levels, and a number of other factors around the country to make a decision as to what that level should be. What should that level be to incorporate the changes into eligibility? So if salaries are going up, if the economy is booming, if everyone has a job, how much does that salary eligibility level need to go up each year? And so we dig into those numbers. Now, also I'm going to put on the website something that looks at minimum wage. And we're looking at a California company example, even though I'm based here in North Carolina. I work with clients throughout North America and frankly throughout 46 of the 50 states. And so what we're looking at is to understand how much of a change, how critical will these rate changes be in minimum wage to your business. So currently the minimum wage in California is $10, I believe. It's going to $10.50 on January 1st, 2017. So how many of your employees will be eligible for a 50 cent an hour increase? 2018, the rate goes to $11. 2019, it goes to $12, and so on. So every year until 2022, this minimum wage rate will be increasing in the California businesses until it hits $15 an hour. Other states have other phase-in rates, but the general conversation is, at some point throughout the country, the minimum wage is intended to hit at least $15 an hour. And so what will that do to your business? Again, if you don't have that many minimum wage employees, it's not going to impact you that much directly. My argument is going to be that every business is going to be impacted by the minimum wage and overtime eligibility changes directly or indirectly, because our prices from our suppliers are going to go up. So when we're at Starbucks, our price is going to go up. Whether we're at McDonald's, the price is going to go up. Wherever we are and whoever we do business with that relies on a workforce that is minimum wage compensated, then that ripple effect is going to go through our businesses. And so we need, as businesses, to be analyzing this again from our workforce, our internal standpoint of who in our business is going to be impacted, how does the total business work, how do we rebalance our workforce, and will it require operational changes? In restaurants here in North Carolina, and I know around the country, I see kiosks being put on the table to take the orders. And the only interaction we have is being seated by a person. The person who seats us and the person who brings us our food. Our ordering is now done through automation, through a kiosk that says, here are your options, here's what you can purchase, and this is your ways for customizing. It's all on a touch screen. That is a byproduct of businesses trying to maintain their profitability for their investors and still be compliant with all the changes in minimum wage, in overtime eligibility, and all of these regulations that are out there. They're trying to afford to stay in business, and what happens with businesses is we tend to look for systems, software, mechanical tools to enable us to maintain our capacity, maintain our quality, maintain our service levels, maintain our production ability, and control our costs so that we can still be profitable. Because if we aren't profitable, we're not in business. We're not able to pay ourselves as business owners. We're not able to pay investors for the capital they put into our business to enable us to grow and expand. And so we have to be strategic in analyzing how we do business and how the economic impacts of price changes of our inputs, labor, that's what I've been talking about today, but the ripple effects to other goods and services that we may be purchasing will also be impacting our business, because prices will rise as minimum wages increase. As more people are eligible for overtime, prices rise. We've seen it with Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act. Businesses rebalanced their workforce because they couldn't afford health care. They couldn't afford the options that were before them and still stay in business. And people may argue that fact, but the reality is businesses that are for profit, and I'm going to argue businesses that are nonprofit, have to make money. They have to bring in more money than they spend, and that is generally referred to as profit. Why would a nonprofit be concerned about profit? Because they have to be in business too. The difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit, by definition, is simply who owns the business. A for-profit is owned by investors. A nonprofit is not owned by anyone. It's for the public benefit. So there are no shareholders for a nonprofit. And that's the distinction. It's not whether we make money or not. I say we're for-profit and when we are owned by investors, and we're for profit for a purpose when we are not owned and are a public benefit type organization, a non-profit in our normal nomenclature. And so every for profit and every non-profit business has to sit down and understand what it means to them when labor costs are going to increase, how much, in what way, and can we control and manage that? We just don't let it happen. we have to understand the domino and ripple effects of those changes on positions around those that are impacted by the overtime and the minimum wage. Will we have to increase other compensation to recognize the differences in skills, experiences, and abilities when minimum wages are going up? So what does this mean for the future of our businesses? It means that if we are not strategic, if we are not analytical, if we are not looking at this from a total business perspective and identifying related risks and opportunities, then we will struggle to stay in business. This is not a one-time thing. Minimum wage increases are going to be happening in most states annually or biannually, but they're going to continue to happen. We know that every 3 years, the salary level for overtime eligible staff, workforce members, will be changing. And so we need to develop systems and tools now that enable us to plan for those changes. Every business should have at least a 3-year, if not a 5-year business plan that looks at the risks and opportunities. And increases in regulations are one of those risks. The opportunity is to manage it more effectively than your competitor so that you don't have as great of an increase in labor costs. You don't have to have as large of a price increase or as big of a reduction in your profitability. These types of regulatory changes are the most obvious costs to our business. But the reality is there are more regulatory changes every year for our businesses. What is charged sales tax on in each state changes generally every year. When is use tax applicable on sales and purchases? What number of municipalities, counties, states are we operating in? And are the revenue and tax rules the same in each of those states? How and where we do business tells us how many regulatory agencies, how many legislative bodies, how many rules potentially can change for our business. Sometimes those rules are specific to an industry. Sometimes they go across all industries and all sizes of business as the overtime and the minimum wage increases are there. But as business owners, as business leaders and managers, we have to be strategic in our decision making and in our analysis of what's impacting our business. Are we compliant today with all the rules that we're supposed to be compliant with? Do we even know what those rules are? Have we invested the time and effort to understand changes in our sales and use tax and how it might apply to our business? Here in North Carolina, we had a change in what businesses labor sales tax is charged on labor. So if you had a retail storefront, if you have a business where you display goods and service and talk about services for sale, installation labor for that type of business would become taxable this year in North Carolina. I had many clients overlook that the tax rule changes in sales and use tax this year. In the past, I have had clients who simply thought if they made every employee salaried, they would not be having to worry about who was eligible for overtime. That is a concern because many advisors that will talk with small businesses will be undereducated on the implications and the rule changes and the regulations and how to interpret them. I know I spend hundreds of hours every year staying current on regulation changes, on rule changes. And giving people guidance on those rules requires me to understand their business. So if they're a government contractor, be aware when minimum wage changed for government contractors, even though it did not change in general for the rest of the population. When minimum labor rates have to be met on a government contract, we have to understand what those requirements are and how we determine what those wage rates will be. What happens to a business if they take a government contract that takes their minimum wage from $7.75 an hour to $10 an hour when that government contract goes away? Those are strategic issues. Those are financial planning issues. Those are operational decisions that every business should look at as part of a planning process. I tell my clients I am not as concerned about the paper format of the business plan they have, the budgets we develop, or their ability to forecast. My concern is that they're going through the process of finding the questions and the answers that need to be asked and answered for their business, that they're looking for risks and opportunities, that they're aware of things that are going to change that will force them because they are mandates to do business differently. This year, our biggest one will most likely be the overtime eligibility salary level change. 4.1 million businesses are estimated to be impacted by this directly. Add in minimum wage increases annually, we have businesses coming to a tipping point as to whether they are profitable enough to operate as they are currently structured, as they are currently operating, if they comply, or I should say when they comply with these rules. Some businesses that we've been talking with have already decided they can't afford to grow. They're at a size that if they grow, more regulations are going to be placed on them because of the size of the business or the stage of the business or what business they're in. And so they are consciously choosing to stay a certain size, a certain level of sales. It is breaking their heart when they're having to take full-time employees that have been with their business for years, people that they consider their friends, their coworkers, their family in a lot of instances, to part-time status because they can't afford to keep them on at a full-time status and comply with all the rules that comes with that. Their businesses are getting smaller. Their plans for the future of their businesses have changed. They want to stay strong, they want to stay stable, and they want to stay the size they currently are. It's very challenging as a consultant to sit down with my clients and help them make those hard decisions, especially when it literally is family members working in family businesses and they have to look at their son or daughter and say, I can't afford to keep you in this business at a full-time salary. I can only afford to have you 20 hours a week. Or I can only afford to have you 2 days a week. And we watch these businesses and these families go through that stress and that pressure of the ripple effects of being a successful business, but not such a successful business that they have unlimited resources and the unlimited ability to raise their prices in the face of competition to serve their customers. The biggest concern many of the businesses I am talking with in implementing these changes isn't figuring it out, isn't deciding which scenario is going to work out best for them to minimize cost and maximize their operational capacity. Their biggest challenge is looking at it and saying, if I have to have a 20% increase in my labor costs and I try to raise my prices to offset that, I will now be overpriced in my market against foreign competition where what labor rates are less. And so where do they find that balance between being able to increase price some and having to eat part of the cost increase, whether that's labor, whether that's goods and materials coming in whose prices have risen because their labor costs have risen. This taking a strategic direction, making a plan, setting a goal, and making reasoned, informed decisions is what we have to do in the face of these overtime eligibility changes, increases in minimum wage, increases in overseas competition, increasing regulation on our businesses and our lives. I heard a statistics the other day, and I believe it was on the news. I don't know which news channel it was. But in the past 7+ years, we've had over 10,000 pages of new regulations imposed on businesses. And that's kind of a scary thing because as business owners, we need to know what those regulations are. We need to be constantly monitoring, getting advice from our accountants, our lawyers, our HR consultants. We need to be strategic. We need to be proactive. But we can frequently overlook key items that our businesses need to address because we are actually needed to work in our business just as much as we need to work on our business and stay current. So sit down today. Figure out if you have anyone in your business that should be currently eligible for overtime that hasn't been paid overtime. Take the next step and look at the new eligibility levels and see if that list changes. Keep in mind that not complying with these changes is, this isn't optional. Our businesses have to comply with these rules and the regulations. The consequences, the risk that puts our business in when we can't or don't comply, when we choose not to comply with rules and regulations, is far greater than simple financial risk. And while financial risk is never simple, we're not just talking about losing dollars and cents and having to pay back pay for overtime. There are fines, there are penalties, and there are consequences of people ending up in jail. A business in Minnesota, the CEO, an owner of the business, I believe their jail term was 2 years. They had fines, they had penalties. They had consequences far beyond what they had expected, or maybe they were willing to risk it, but they chose to not be compliant, to not pay people their overtime, those types of things. That's not optional. Now, if you can't afford it, then you need to rebalance your business. If you don't like it, you still need to deal with it. If you don't know how to address it, then you need to invest time and money with a consultant that can help you. And you want a consultant that can help you not just deal with the HR aspect of this, but with the financial aspect, the ripple effect aspect, the strategic and operational issues of complying with this rule and being able to see what else this is going to trigger and cause to happen. You need to document every employee's role, their job title, their duties, their salary level, and get an idea of how many hours they work a week as part of this process. And you need to be prepared to do this every 3 years, to update that information, to stay current, and to understand that in 3 years, you're looking at another change in overtime eligibility. Plan for it, budget for it, and be ready to change your business and make reasoned, proactive change to do that. Now, there are a couple things I hear businesses suggest they can do. Well, I can put people on independent contractor status. I need to have a whole nother show on that. But the IRS in general has ruled that once an employee, always an employee. So you can't let an employee go and bring them back as an independent contractor and have them do the same job they were doing as an employee to avoid these types of things. You can't simply ignore it. You can't redefine the job to make it look like they have responsibilities that they really don't get to do. So you can't say, well, they can hire and fire, and that makes them exempt, when they can't hire and fire. You have to comply with the letter of the law, the intent of the law. And a lot of people say, well, I don't understand it. I'll just wait until something happens. Ignorance of the law has never been a defense when dealing with the government. I didn't know is not an answer an auditor accepts as a reason for not complying with it. Because as business owners, as key managers in businesses, we are required to know as part of our responsibilities. And so, while today we've been talking about the Fair Labor Standards Act, the eligibility for overtime, changes in minimum wage, this is a bit broader conversation than that. We need to invest time and effort in educating ourselves as business owners as to what potentially we have to comply with, what actually we have to comply with, and when, and how are we going to address those issues proactively. Be an informed business owner. Be an informed business leader or manager. Because if you aren't, you may find your employees know more about these issues than you do. Our workforces are becoming more and more aware and more educated with regard to labor-related issues. And they can blow the whistle on your business and cost you more than you think. So make wise investment in figuring out what you need to do to get your business ready for changes in labor costs and other costs as the business evolves. And this is Lee Strickland on Focus on Business. And until next time, stay focused on the important things. If you would like more information and to take a look at the spreadsheets and the analysis examples I referred to on the show today, visit focusresourcesinc.com. Click on Listen and Watch, click on Focus on Business, and find today's show on overtime and minimum wage eligibility. You'll see the downloadable files there. Focus on Business and WCOM-FM would like to thank our underwriters. Close HR Connections, helping you build a strategic HR game plan for business success. Their website is closehrconnections.com. And Focus Resources, your business growth specialists, transforming your business from the core. Visit their website at focusresourcesinc.com.